Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Umicore half-year results 2012. I'm pleased to present Mr. Marc Grynberg, CEO, and Ludo van der Velde. For the first part of this call, let me remind you that all participants are in listen-only mode, and afterwards there will be a question-and-answer session. Gentlemen, please begin.
Thank you, and good afternoon, everyone, or good morning for those of you who are dialing in from the Americas. Sorry for the slight delay that we had due to a technical hiccup. I'm happy to welcome you to the presentation of Umicore's half-year results. I'm happy to welcome you to the presentation of Umicore's half-year results for 2012. I will comment on the evolution of our business in the first half before handing over to Ludo, our CFO, who will cover the financial aspects. After that, I will open up the call for any questions that you may have. As you will have seen from this morning's announcement, we produced another set of good results despite an obvious economic slowdown globally. Overall revenues grew by 8% in the first 6 months of the year, and you will recall that we had generated double-digit revenue growth in the first quarter, and the first half performance therefore evidently reflects some softening of demand in the second quarter, which had an effect on volumes and prices in certain businesses. If we look at the comparison between the recurring EBIT on a year-to-year basis, there are two aspects that I would like to highlight. One is that the difference can be ascribed to our growth strategy with higher R&D expenditure and higher depreciation cost, accounting for the entire difference between the levels of recurring EBIT of this year and those of the first half of 2011. Secondly, is the fact that the revenue growth did not translate into additional profit is due to price and mix effects, and largely the result of the economic downturn. Growth investments have continued in the first half of this year, with a number of new initiatives announced during the past few months, and which I will recap later on. From a cash flow perspective, we continue to perform very well indeed, with strongly positive cash flow generation and a further reduction in our net debt and gearing levels. Finally, we confirm the distribution of an interim dividend that equates to half of the dividend paid in respect of the previous financial year. And this represents €0.50 a share and will be paid out in early September. In terms of outlook for the full year, we are obviously operating in a challenging economic environment given the contraction of the economy in Europe and the slowdown observed in some other regions. Even considering this more difficult environment, we are expecting second half performance to be essentially in line with that of the first half, which I believe demonstrates a good level of resilience. You will recall that we had given earnings guidance back in April at a time when visibility in many of our markets was limited. Our outlook for the full year falls within the range that we had provided at the time, although given the economic circumstances, it is reasonable to expect that the full year recurring EBIT would be in the lower half of the previously given range. If we now look at the results in some more detail, you can see that the revenue generation overall was very positive in the first half, showing 8% growth. There was a strong growth in the first quarter, extending actually the trends of last year, followed by some softening in demand in the second quarter, as demand slowed indeed in some of our end markets. And this evolution, I believe, is very much in line with what we have observed in the global economy. The slowdown was felt most of all in performance materials and energy materials, while growth remained very positive in the catalysis and recycling business groups, and also the rechargeable battery materials business unit that forms part of the energy materials activities. From a profitability perspective, I see the first half as representing a very good showing despite the more challenging economic environment. As I just mentioned, the difference between this year's performance and that of 2011 corresponds exactly to the higher levels of research and development expenditure and the increased levels of depreciation linked to recently completed investments. These investments also entail additional startup and qualification costs, which also have an effect on profitability as the business continues to grow. If we look beyond these effects, we can see that less favorable pricing and mix also played a certain role in dampening profitability. The pricing effects are a combination of lower metal prices on some of our recycling activities, while in some parts of our business, the product or the regional mix was somewhat less favorable. Overall, however, it's been a strong showing, and this is reflected in a return on capital employed of more than 17%, which is well within the targeted range of long-term average returns for the group. As I mentioned, R&D expenditure was up substantially from last year, with the increase being 19% in relative terms, or representing a total uplift of 14 million euro in absolute value. We recorded an increase in all business groups, with the most pronounced change coming in the catalysis and recycling activity. In catalysis, the increase is related partly to customer development and test work in HDD, and is in part due to the development of new product technologies to meet future emission norms. In recycling, the increase in R&D expenditure follows the startup of the UHT pilot at the end of last year in Hoboken. Capital expenditures were stable at 95 million euro, driven particularly by new investments in catalysis and recycling. The lower level of capital expenditures in energy materials is largely the result of a wave of growth initiatives in rechargeable battery materials having been completed in 2011. As you will have understood from recent announcements, we have plenty of investment projects in the pipeline in energy materials, so this should only be seen as a pause for us to catch our breath in this area. Looking briefly at the evolution of the number of colleagues working at Umicore, you can see that the numbers grew by 2.5% in the first half, and this was mainly due to the increased need for people as a result of our growth initiatives, particularly in catalysis. I should point out, however, that some of the footprint adjustments that we are currently undertaking, for example, in our jewelry and industrial metals business in China, will likely lead to a decrease in the number of colleagues in the second half of the year. Let's now stop off in each business group and take a look at the evolution of the business in a bit more detail. Turning to catalysis first, you can see that revenues were up by 16%, while we also recorded good growth in terms of profitability. In automotive catalysts, the overall growth in volumes was in line with that of the global automotive production. In Europe, where the market is facing a number of challenges, our sales growth outpaced that of the car production by a significant margin as a result of our presence on platforms that are selling particularly well. Actually, production decreased in Europe while our revenues continued to grow. If we look at other major regions, sales growth matched the evolution in car production that we have seen in North America as well as in Asia. One caveat with regard to the revenue growth is to point out that part of the revenue growth in the business group can be attributed to higher raw material pass-through costs. These pass-through elements appear only in the revenue line and by definition do not generate additional profits for us as they are simply transferred to the customer. The fact that we grew relatively faster in North America, where there is hardly any diesel penetration in the market, so the fact that we grew faster in North America than in other regions also meant that overall margins were a bit lower. The precious metals chemistry business performed very well in the first half, This activity is developing nicely, and the sales of advanced catalysts that are used in applications such as life science have been selling particularly well. As you will have noticed from the comments around R&D and CapEx, the Catalysis Business Group has a full pipeline of development initiatives. We have summarized the main ones on slide number 10. Preparation for the upcoming Euro 6 legislation in Europe is progressing well. We previously announced that we were building a new HDD production line in Florange in France, and this is now entering its final preparation stage. We also announced the investment in a new production facility close to our Rheinfelden plant in Germany, and that should be operational in the second half of next year and should help us meet additional demand for Euro 6 related light duty applications. We also have projects that are nearing completion in China that relate to production capabilities and to our technology offering in the region, while we also recently announced that we would be building a new technical center in Americana in Brazil. Back in June, we also announced a new venture with our long-standing partner in Japan, Nippon Shokubai, and this 60-40 joint venture, so will be 60% owned by Umicore, is called the Umicore Shokubai and will provide us with a global platform to serve the Japanese OEMs with the aim of increasing our presence with Japanese producers in the coming years. Finally, today you read that we will invest in a new production facility for the precious metals chemistry operations in the U.S., which will give us a better platform and a broader product offering to serve North American customers. Turning now to energy materials, we can see that it was a rather mixed picture. Revenues were stable year on year, while recurring EBIT was down. Higher results in rechargeable battery materials were actually offset by a lower contribution, or actually more than offset, by a lower contribution from the other business units. If we look at recurring EBITDA, though, the year-on-year decrease was much less pronounced, and obviously we did complete a large number of investment projects in energy materials last year, and this is translating in higher depreciation charges. In cobalt and specialty materials, activity levels remain good, but pricing pressure had a negative effect on product margins, as well as the performance of the recycling and refining activities, which have a certain sensitivity to the cobalt price. I should point that we enjoy particularly favorable, but unfortunately temporary conditions in the market for nickel chemicals during most of 2010 and in the early part of 2011. And this makes, obviously, the comparison more challenging in this business. The economic downturn has also had an impact on the electro-optic materials business with lower orders for substrates used in space applications and ongoing low levels of orders in the optics business. There was a similar situation or somewhat similar situation in thin film products where sales were affected by low demand from customers in the flat panel display sector as investments in new coating capacity got postponed, and we also experienced slower penetration of new coating technologies for use in photovoltaics. In rechargeable battery materials, in contrast, we continue to see strong volume growth for the different types of cathode materials that we produce, and part of this was the result of higher demand for the high-density lithium cobalt materials that are used in portable electronics and particularly in high-end applications such as tablet computers and smartphones. We also saw steady growth in sales for NMC materials as they increasingly find their way into a number of hybrids and electric vehicles. You will be aware that we have been investing heavily in this business to prepare for future growth opportunities, and as I mentioned earlier, one of the short-term effects of these investments is that and these developments is that product and plant qualification costs and higher depreciation charges will weigh for a while on the overall profitability of the business group. The various development initiatives in energy materials are captured on slide 13, and you can clearly see there that the rechargeable battery materials business is a key focus in terms of investments. The new precursor and cathode materials operations are due to come on stream in South Korea during the course of next year, and given the potential scale of anticipated customer demand, we will almost certainly be looking to invest further in additional production capabilities in the coming years. From a technology perspective, we have also broadened our portfolio through the BeLife partnership with Prayon to develop lithium iron phosphate materials, and the new pilot plant that is currently being built in Angers in Belgium will be operational later on this year. In the cobalt and specialty chemicals business, we are developing a new distribution platform in the U.S., which mirrors the successful service offering for customers that we have in the European marketplace. Finally, the consolidation of the optics activities in Quapo in the U.S. is scheduled to be completed by the end of this year. In performance materials, we saw an impact of the downturn on volumes and mix in the second quarter. Overall revenues in the first half were stable, while recurring EBIT for the period was down by some 20% year-on-year. In building products, we are clearly feeling the effects of a very challenging construction environment in Europe, and this has had a telling impact on sales volumes. Demand for zinc chemicals for use in applications such as ceramics, anti-corrosive paints, or tires and batteries was also lower, with the added impact of a lower zinc price on the margins of the business unit's zinc recycling operations. In platinum engineered materials, revenues were stable, although demand in the key segment of high purity glass manufacturing has fallen because customers there too are postponing the installation of new production lines given the current economic environment. In technical materials, we saw a rather mixed picture with the higher sales of brazing products used in wear applications, compensating for weaker demand in most other application fields. Our associate Element 6 Abrasives also recorded lower revenues and a lower contribution to Umicore's earnings as a result of reduced sales volumes and a somewhat less favorable product mix. Although the investment pipeline has a somewhat different profile from catalysis, energy materials, or recycling, we do have some significant projects underway in performance materials. These include, for instance, the move of the Chinese fine zinc powder operations to a new state-of-the-art facility near Changsha, and the further development of the zinc oxide operations in India. In building products, the investment in new facility to produce high value-added surface-treated zinc materials is progressing well and is on schedule, while in Element 6 Abrasives, the company recently announced the construction of a new synthetic diamond innovation center near Oxford, where the company will group all of its R&D efforts. In recycling, revenues were up by 10%, and recurring EBIT reached €122 million, which, although 8% lower than 2011, still represents an outstanding performance. The revenues for the precious metals refining activities were well up, despite the volume effects of an extended maintenance shutdown earlier this year, as we had commented on the occasion of the quarter one update. The supply market in general for different types of complex secondary and end-of-life materials remained very supportive, and overall refining charges were higher year-on-year as a result thereof. The reason for the slightly lower level of profitability can be attributed to a lower prices for certain metals. We have long-term contracts in place that are related to metals such as platinum and palladium, and which provided a counterweight to lower spot prices for these metals during the first half. For some metals, however, and particularly those for which there is no paper market, such as tellurium, rhodium, ruthenium, or indium, we felt some impact of lower market prices. In jewelry and industrial metals, the continued strong performance of the recycling activities more than compensated for lower levels of demand for gold and silver-based products that are used in applications such as jewelry, photovoltaics, or coins. Precious metals management continued to perform well, although demand for metals for industrial and investment use was slightly lower, and the metals markets provided indeed fewer opportunities for the trading activities. As you know, the trialing of the UHT technology at the pilot plant in Hoboken was intensified, with costs being higher as a result thereof. Again, we have a number of developments to remind you of in the recycling business group. In Hoboken, the upgrade and expansion of the sampling operations is well advanced, and we have recently started to build a new biological water treatment plant. In order to prepare for the growing availability of spent batteries from hybrid and electric cars, we have also completed work on a new dismantling center for these batteries in Maxton, North Carolina. In the jewelry and industrial metals business, we are investing in an expansion of the silver recycling and refining operations in Thailand, and on the other side, we intend to close the activities that we have in Foshan in China. At this stage, I would like to hand over the line to Ludo, our CFO, who will talk you through the financial elements.
Thank you, Marc. First of all, let's take a look at earnings per share, where you can see a good degree of stability compared to last year. The decrease in EBIT was indeed compensated to a large extent by lower financial and tax charges, as well as the positive effects of the share buybacks of last year. The dividend reflects the dividend policy of paying out half of the previous year's dividend as an interim dividend. This equates to 50 euro cents and will be paid out in early September. Looking now at the non-recurring results, the overall non-recurring result at EBIT level was minus 22 million, with the majority of this amount being provisions linked to the closure of the operations in Foshan and South Plainfield, and also closure of optics production in Olen. The environmental provisions relate mainly to the ongoing soil remediation work that we are doing in Viviers in France. If we take the tax impact of these amounts into consideration, and also the non-cash IAS 39 elements, we arrive at a negative net non-recurring result of just under 18 million. As Marc mentioned, the cash flows in the first half remained very positive. You can see here that operational cash flows were just over 230 million, and there were no significant changes in the net working capital requirements during that period. We were able to absorb a high level of CapEx, pay out the increased dividend relating to 2011, pay out taxes, and also be able to pay down debt. Our capital structure remains really very healthy. The debt, as you can see, has gone down slightly during the first half to 255 million euro, which represents a gearing ratio of 12.5% and a very comfortable debt to EBITDA ratio of 0.5. So all in all, we remain in a strong financial position and very much able to independently fund our various strategic growth initiatives. Marc, I will now hand back to you to wrap up.
Thank you, Ludo. Although I will not recap on everything, I would like to single out the fact that despite the challenging economic conditions, we have posted a good result that falls within our previously provided guidance. While obvious challenges lie ahead, I consider this to be a positive performance. Our various investment programs remain on track, and as Ludo highlighted, we remain in a strong financial position. In my internal message to all Umicore colleagues today, I drew on the Olympic theme by saying that we are in the middle of a 5,000-meter final, and although the current lap is proving more testing than expected, we are well prepared to finish the race strongly, and obviously our aim should be nothing less than the gold medal. With that, I would like to turn the line over for questions.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin our Q&A session. If you wish to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad to enter a queue. That's 01 on your telephone keypad to enter a queue. And we have a question from Rihanna O'Connor from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead and ask your question.
Yeah, thank you very much for taking my questions. My questions focus mostly on your refining activities. I've got two questions about that. First of all, I mean, you say supply conditions remain buoyant. Looking back at your 09 report, I read through the bit on the recycling business there. The business was down 42%. And it seems that you had a fall in autocat volumes coming for recycling. Your prices, spot prices were down, etc. Can you tell us what's different this time and why you're seeing recycling volumes so buoyant, especially given peers such as Johnson Matthey are reporting 20% declines in refinery volumes? The second question, again, on recycling. You're protected at the moment by long-term contracts in that business. I understand that those go on into the second half as well. Can you talk a little bit about what happens when those long-term contracts come off? Are we going to see a strong decrease in profits at that business, and when will that be, please?
Okay, so, to start with the first question, I don't think the comparison to Johnson Matthey's refining activity would be telling a lot, because as far as we see it, the Johnson Matthey activity is mostly a refining of higher grade material, while we focus on the pure recycling of very complex materials, which is something that our traditional catalyst competitors are not doing or not equipped to do. And as a result of that, we are tapping into a vast array of supply segments and supply streams that are actually not accessible to, indeed, these traditional refining or catalyst competitors. And this is a key difference. And in most of the segments where we are addressing, we have seen extremely buoyant market conditions, either in terms of availability of volume, either in terms of pricing, and sometimes in terms of a combination of both. Just to give you one example, as you know, we are a fairly large recycler of electronic scrap. This is typically a segment that some PGM refiners are not addressing because they don't have the capabilities to treat this sort of very complex material, and this is a segment that is growing in volumes and where pricing conditions also were very supportive. We also had very good market conditions in terms of availability and sometimes terms for some of the industrial byproducts that we are processing, and this explains indeed the strong performance and also the optimistic outlook statement that was made, because and you will recall that from previous discussions that we have a fairly good visibility in that business given the long-term nature of a number of the contracts that we have there, and indeed what we see today is fairly promising in that business. Now, coming to the price effect and the metal price effects in particular, the contracts that we have, the protection that we have in place for some of the precious metals extends through the second half of this year and for a number of contracts well into 2013 as well. So you should not expect a major disruption in terms of the precious metals price impact on our contribution. What remains truly variable, of course, for the same period of time is the impact of secondary metals and metals that cannot be hedged because there is no paper market for those. Some of them I've mentioned during the conference call, that's tellurium, indium, rhodium, etc. And there indeed we are exposed to the market price fluctuations. But again, so far we have seen, because we recycle such a vast number of material types and such a vast number of metals, we recover such a large number of metals, typically they do not move, they do not all move in sync in terms of pricing, and in certain cases price decrease in some metals are compensated by increase in some other metals. In the first part of this year, there was some impact from lower secondary metal prices. Some of them are used in technology applications where the demand currently is not so great. So we could expect some continued softness there, but again, nothing of a disruptive nature.
Okay, sorry, just a couple of points of clarification there. You say, we talk about the high-grade volumes coming down. Surely that's going to have a strong mix effect on you. And the second quick follow-up question on recycling, what is your order book length at the moment? You said it was 6 months earlier in the year. Has that changed?
The order book in recycling?
Mm-hmm.
No, that's not changed. That's still approximately what we have today. And sorry, the first question...
We talked about volumes being down at Johnson Matthey, but you're saying that's only high-grade material. Surely those kind of volumes at AutoCats and other very high-grade scrap, that's going to have a mix effect on you?
No, because the high-grade content of metal doesn't necessarily mean a high margin. To the contrary, for us, what drives the margin is the complexity. So if you have... some material that contain a lot of precious metals and limited impurities, that would be that could be low margin for us. And we focus on those materials that are most complex to process, and so they can be very low grade and high margin.
Okay, thank you.
So, in other words, the mix so far, and you've seen that in the first part of the year, the mix effect has been positive. Because as you will recall from previous discussions and especially from the Q1 update, we had somewhat less volumes processed in the first part of the year because of the extended shutdown that we had, but still revenues were up because of the overall better mix and pricing effects.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And our next question is from Mrs. Hella Zuetin from JP Morgan. Please go ahead and ask your question.
Good afternoon. Two questions for me, please. The first one is on the depreciation guidance. During your Q1 conference call, you guided for the depreciation to be some 50 million euros higher than what it was in 2011. In H1, you reported D&A of 75 million euros, which is 9 million higher than in H1 2011. Do you still expect depreciation to be 50 million higher for the full year 2012, which implies D&A of around 100 million euros for H2, any clarification on that side? And secondly, on the tax rate, you reported a tax rate of 16.5% in H1 versus 18.5% in full year 2011. Could you give us a guidance on the expected tax rate in 2012 as a whole, please?
D&A, yes, you can most likely extrapolate the first half. I think that's probably a good estimate to use, so it may be a bit more than the 15 million that I had indicated earlier. And as far as the tax rate is concerned, I will ask Ludo to...
So it wasn't 50 million, it was 15 that you guided for, sorry.
Sorry,
Was it 15 that you guided for, not 50 previously? Because I thought it was 50 million...
No. I'm sorry. I thought the increase.
The increase.
I thought the increase. No. I didn't understand the question correctly.
Okay. So, what's the guidance for the full year? Is it around 20 million higher in 2012 than it was in 2011?
Indeed.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Indeed. Sorry for the confusion.
On the tax rate, the tax rate overall that we have now is in the first half, 19.1%, or just 19%. At the current pace that we see, we should be around that same order of magnitude for the second half of the year. Not a substantial increase to be expected there.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. Our next question is from Rupesh Madlani from Barclays Capital. Please go ahead and ask your question.
Hi, good afternoon. Rupesh Madlani from Barclays. I love the Olympic example. Three questions from me, please. First, could you comment on how you see competition in the recycling segment? Has that changed materially in the last 6 months, or do you expect to see that change in the next 6 months? Second, with respect to your leverage, can you talk about how you see and how you think about potential expansion of recycling capacity and the link to UHT technology there? Lastly, what difference do you typically retain between the estimated and guaranteed yield in the recycling division, and how do you expect this to evolve over the coming quarters? Thank you.
The first question can be answered in a very simple manner. No, we have not seen significant changes in the competitive landscape in the past 6 months in recycling. Significant meaning that would have an impact on our supply possibilities. We do not expect anything significant in the short term. In the medium or long term, yes, I think we should continue to expect changes in the competitive landscape, and that's been the case in the past and will continue to be the case. However, our ability to source from a variety of segments and to move flexibly from one to the other and optimize the mix constantly is something that will probably remain unmatched for a while in terms of competition. I think that distinction should remain, but competitive landscape in the long term is due to change like in any other industry. In terms of your second question about, can you maybe clarify what you meant with the second question about the expansion recycling?
Sure. I mean, thinking about your leverage and the potential performance of UHT, how do you think about the timing and financing around potential expansion of capacity?
Oh, okay. No, the timing is still unchanged, so we need another, let's say, 18 months or so to complete the 18 to 24 months to complete the technical test and the pilot test of various material streams and to fine-tune the process technology in the pilot facility in Hoboken. Then we will come to investment decisions. Now, obviously, with the kind of balance sheet that we have, the financing of the expansion is likely to be funded from the existing balance sheet, from the existing lines.
And you would keep that amount of leverage through to that decision point 18 months down the line?
I think that in the current economic environment, we would probably be well advised to keep a low level of gearing and know that we run the company in a way that enables us to maintain growth capex, maintain R&D programs, and maintain dividend payments at any point in time in the economic cycle. And we are at a point in the cycle which is less, where the economy is less supportive, so we need indeed to err on the conservative side from a balance sheet point of view.
Sure.
And then, sorry, your last question, Ash, was?
Just the what's the main difference between what you keep in estimated yield for recycling and the guaranteed yield? How big is that gap, and how do you expect that gap to evolve over the coming quarters?
Yeah. Unfortunately, I cannot give you any detail on that, because that is very highly sensitive information from a commercial and from a competitive point of view, as you will imagine, and hopefully as you will accept.
Okay, very good. Thanks.
Thank you very much. And our next question is from Wim Hoste from KBC Securities. Please go ahead and ask your question.
Yes, good afternoon. Two questions from my side. First, on rechargeable battery materials. There you mentioned that premiums have started to stabilize after we saw, I think, in the last year or year and a half or so, quite some pressure. Could you maybe indicate whether that stabilization of premiums is visible in all market segments, or is that really mainly something in the nickel manganese cobalt segment, for example, and the lithium cobaltite segment? That's the first question. And then second question, could you maybe also offer a second half guidance for R&D expenditure? Will that be comparable to the first half number? Thank you.
Indeed, the premiums in rechargeable battery materials have started to stabilize. And I mean, there have been a number of developments there. One of them is clearly the fast-growing demand for the high-end materials used in applications such as tablets and smartphones, and that is driving, to a certain extent, the pricing. And this is also having an impact on the mix in terms of premiums or the premium stabilization or development, I should say. So it is across segments. And it is also a matter of mixed development, given the fast growth in that segment that I've just mentioned. In terms of R&D, you can expect indeed a roughly similar level of expenditures in the second half of the year, give or take a few million euros. Clearly, when we engage into R&D programs, this is for the long term, and we're trying not to change that every quarter in function of the economic environment. But give or take a couple of million, indeed, it should be of the same magnitude.
Okay, very clear. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And our next question is from Jan van der Bossen from Petercam. Mr. van der Bossen, please go ahead and ask your question.
Yes, good afternoon. Two questions from me as well. First of all, on recycling, coming back to the explanation in the press release regarding the decrease of the recurring EBIT, you mentioned indeed, and it's also to a previous question, you said there was no real mix effect in that decline. But I was still wondering how do you explain the higher top line and then the decline in the EBIT, because I was always of the understanding that catalyst business was a quite valuable business for the recycling operations of Umicore as well. So I thought there was some kind of a mix effect in that business, given higher top line and then lower recurring EBIT. So maybe clarify what I am missing there. And secondly, some housekeeping on the CAPEX. You mentioned in your opening statements there would be no pause in the pause in the energy materials CAPEX is only temporary. Could I maybe tempt you to give some guidance for the CAPEX overall for the group in the second half? Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Regarding the profitability and the mix effect in the recycling, again, the mix effect was positive, and that is reflected in higher refining charges compared to last year, while the volumes were slightly down. And why are the profits slightly lower than last year while the revenues were up? That's the effect of, there are two effects. One is a lower contribution from the secondary metals, and as I mentioned, these are non-hedgeable metals whose price decreased for certain of them and the demand decreased in the first part of the year. And the second reason is that indeed we have started to intensify the development efforts after the startup of the UHT pilot at the end of last year, and you see now the full effects thereof coming through the P&L. Now, I've maybe not explicitly mentioned that during my presentation, but the difference in profitability from one year to the other is fairly marginal, considering the absolute level of profitability of that business. And you know that I tend not to draw conclusions or extrapolate from short-term fluctuations.
Okay, thanks. Maybe if I can follow on, if you, the two explanations for the decline, the small decline in EBIT, are both elements more or less equally important, or is one more important than the other one?
The contribution from the secondary metals is somewhat more important in terms of effect than the intensified pilot costs, pilot work on the UHT. Okay, regarding CapEx, I had given an earlier guidance that CapEx would likely exceed 200 million euro for the full year. I think that this is still valid today. And as you will have seen from a recent string of announcements, we have approved a certain number of new capital expenditure projects, for instance, in Korea with the upcoming construction of a precursor plant for the battery materials activity, and a certain number of other investments in energy materials and in catalysis that are due to start soon. So overall, yes, I maintain the guidance that I gave a few months ago of CapEx for the full year, probably slightly in excess of 200 million euro.
Brilliant. Thanks.
Thank you very much. And we have a question from Peter Olofsen from Kepler. Please go ahead and ask your question.
Good afternoon. Two questions, if I may. First, following on early questions on battery recycling and UHT. We hear several companies in the value chain, like automotive OEMs and battery makers, talking about potential ways of reusing batteries rather than recycling used batteries. To what extent might that be something you will have to consider in your future planning? And then, also on rechargeable batteries, in recent months, one of your European peers has made quite some announcements on expanding in battery materials, not just in cathodes, but also in electrolyte separators, all the segments. Do you think it might be a disadvantage for you to be only active in cathodes, and would you consider expanding into other segments, for instance, anode material? Or do you feel comfortable with a focus on cathode materials?
Let me start with that one. And, am I wrong in assuming that you're referring to BASF?
You're right.
That's what I thought. No, I don't think it's a disadvantage to be focusing on cathode materials, and I think that once you have reached a level of technology performance and level of capabilities in terms of developing products, developing technologies, and getting them qualified at the customer, you are better off focusing on what you do best, building on your strength, and actually creating a gap with competitors. So diversification there is certainly not an advantage, and I don't believe that we should be concerned about being only in cathodes. This being said, there are a number of developments that we have in our research programs that relate to another component of the rechargeable battery materials. But we don't see ourselves as becoming potentially a one-stop shop for all components of the battery materials. And we don't have the human resources to work on too many of these initiatives simultaneously anyway, so we focus on what we do best, and we continue to increase our technological edge and our market position leadership in what we do best. And I think this is a sensible... Well, sorry, no, I shouldn't say it's a sensible strategy, because you should figure out, and the other stakeholders of Umicore should figure out whether it's a sensible strategy. It may sound a little bit arrogant if I mention that myself. But I think this is clearly what we, this is what we intend to do and will continue to do. In terms of the recycling of batteries, there may be indeed an opportunity to reuse some of these batteries, I mean, automotive batteries, into other applications, such as the storage of renewable energy. That's certainly not a threat to our business, because we understand that from a technical point of view, it may be relatively costly to refurbish some of these batteries and make them fit for a second use. So it will probably not be an overall, I would say, way of treating end-of-life batteries, but will apply to a more limited number of these end-of-life automotive batteries. And the second life will be of a limited lifetime anyways, and those batteries after a limited use in a secondary application will then end up anyways available for recycling. And you will also probably recall from previous discussions and presentations that we do not expect the availability at industrial scale of end-of-life batteries to be significant in the short term, and that in the I would say in the next 5 to 8 or 9 years or so, the growth in the recycling will be fairly limited and will rely to a certain extent on the production scrap as we wait for batteries to arrive at the end of their lifetime.
Okay, that's clear. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And we have a question from Dominic Frauendienst from Citigroup. Please go ahead and ask your question.
Yeah, thank you very much. The first one is on working capital. Clear improvement there year on year. Where do you see that in the second half, and therefore also linked to that, the free cash flow generation potential in the second half? And could you also explain why working capital improved so significantly, also when I compare that to last year? Secondly, could you quantify the impact of the extended shutdown at the Hoboken plant by any chance in terms of EBIT? And lastly, on visibility for the group going into the second half, how good is your visibility and what are really your assumptions, given obviously you have special metals which you cannot hedge, and have you made assumptions for the volatility of these? And so basically two questions here. What is your confidence in the outlook and the new narrowed guidance, basically, and what are your assumptions for the overall development of the business? Thanks.
Okay. Let me start with the easiest question, which is the impact of the extended shutdown. No, I'm not going to provide you any additional detail on that. Suffice to say at this point in time that that we had somewhat lower volumes that could be processed in the first part of the year, and there will be somewhat higher volumes in the second part of the year, which is also forming the basis, or which is part of the basis of our forecast for the full year. In terms of the outlook, and that provides me the opportunity to transition to the other question regarding the outlook. Clearly, the economic scenario that has that is unfolding is not the most exciting one, and that is being taken into account in the forecast. And we have started to see a more pronounced slowdown starting in the second quarter. Of course, Europe was already contracting at that point in time. But we have now seen other regions like North America and China in particular starting to slow down as well, and that is factored in the forecast and the full-year guidance that we have confirmed now at this point in time. Now, of course, the scenario that we have is somewhat different than the downturn scenario that we saw in 2008-2009, where volumes dropped like a stone almost overnight. Today we see, I would say, a better degree of resilience in many of the end markets where we are operating in terms of activity volumes, and a different kind of price pressure than 3 or 4 years ago, of course, which is a logical consequence if volumes continue to be there. So I would say our forecast mainly assumes that what is currently known and seen and observed in terms of economic development is reflected in our guidance. Of course, if the bottom drops off the barrel, you may have a different scenario unfolding, but this is not what we see today. And you know that we have some visibility in certain of our businesses. We have visibility in the automotive sector that extends typically to 3 months with the call-offs that we get from our customers. So we have a fairly decent view on Q3. What Q4 will be there remains to be seen, and the picture that we have see based on the customers' production planning and forecast is not much different than the current picture from a platform or from a regional mix point of view and absolute level of demand. So doesn't look like a disaster in terms of volumes compared to what we observed 4 years ago. And in recycling, the visibility is a bit longer, as you know. And in the other businesses, it has tended to become very short in terms of visibility. And so there we work mostly with the customer production plans and production forecasts, more than based on a firm order book.
So if I may summarize this, then basically sort of a stabilization of the environment and no further leg down anticipated. So if that happens, then you might have to adjust. But at the moment, you don't see that in your order book and talking to your customers.
Indeed.
Okay, thanks. And on the free cash flow?
Sorry, that was the first question. I'll leave that to... That's the more complicated question. I'll leave that to Ludo, if you don't mind.
No worries.
Well, I'll give a very easy answer. If all variables stay within the corridor that we have in mind for the second half of the year, then basically what we should see is a further improvement of our free cash flow. Now, this said, things can happen in the second half which are not yet in the plan, and then, of course, it will have an impact at the end of the year. But all other things equal, it should lead to an improvement in line with our guidance on recurring EBIT. And that will have an impact also on net working capital, because there's nothing that today gives you an indication that there should be a deterioration in net working capital based on the volumes that we have in mind, based on the forecast that we see, and based on the pricing that is today in the market. We don't know, of course, what will happen to metal prices in the second half, but basically that is the corridor that we will be moving in.
Yeah. Of course, as Ludo alluded to, the difficulty in forecasting working capital requirements is that there is an effect of metal prices, and we don't have a crystal ball that tells us where metal prices will be in the next few months. So give or take that effect, this is probably the best guidance we can give. Yeah.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And our next question is from Martin Evans from JP Morgan. Please go ahead and ask your question.
Yeah, thanks very much. Just again getting back to the AutoCat performance in Europe, where I think you say car production was down 5%, but your volumes continued to grow, and you do cite better selling passenger car platforms. Could you just remind me what those particular platforms are? And whether the advantage you're getting from that should continue, and therefore whether to some extent you're protected from what elsewhere is seen to be quite a tough market in Europe for AutoCats. Thanks.
Martin, our position in Europe is mainly driven by our ability to develop the most advanced emission control technologies that are used in the fuel-efficient engines that are gaining in popularity. This relates to some of the diesel technologies, which are the most lucrative among the catalyst systems that we are selling, and also some new technologies related to lean burn, direct injection, turbocharged gasoline engines that have better fuel economy and fairly complicated catalyst systems. So it is the positioning that actually started a few years ago on these fuel-efficient vehicles that is now proving beneficial, and actually it's not something new that is emerging this year. We started to benefit from that more than a year ago, and started to put that forward as an explanation of our success and our growth outpacing that of the market more than a year ago, and I mean it continues. So is this a protection? Well, no, it's not a it's not a full protection against the downturn in the in the automotive industry, because if you have a scenario unfolding like you had in 2008, 2009, I mean all volumes get affected, and so it's not an absolute protection. It is not working well considering the evolution of the mix in the European market. I mean the brand and platform mix in the European market, but it's not a guarantee for the future. Of course, we believe that being well positioned on the fuel efficient platforms is a good place to be, but again, it's not a guarantee.
Thanks very much.
Thank you very much. And our next question is from Laurent Favre from Bank of America. Please go ahead and ask your question.
Yes, good afternoon, Mark and Ludo. I've got one question on catalysis and two clarification questions on recycling. On catalysis, could you talk about what you're seeing right now in terms of mix globally on diesel versus gasoline, you know, larger cars versus smaller cars, and whether that is having an impact right now on your numbers or in terms of your schedule of production for the next 3 months? And then the clarification on recycling. The first question is, just so that I get it right, the only thing that you think will be better in the second half versus the first half is volumes because of that shutdown, or are you also seeing something else that will be better in the second half than in the first half? And then my second question is on capital employed for this division. Looks like it went down 60 million sequentially, even if sales went up sequentially, CapEx was above depreciation, there was no exceptional item in the D&A. So I'm just wondering why was capital employed so low at the end of the first half?
Okay, first of all, let me start with the recycling segment. Indeed, volumes is the only thing that at this point in time we see it as moving up compared to the first half of the year, and we have not, we're not banking on a major change in the other parameters in the business. And of course, we cannot be sure that there will not be a change one way or the other in the metal prices, the non-hedgeable metal prices, that would impact one way or the other the margins. But what we see today is indeed a change in volumes. Capital employed was low at the end of the period, but you know that it's part of the business model to try and have the working cap financed to the maximum extent possible by our material suppliers. And sometimes you have cut-off effects depending on arrivals time and payment times or restitution times. So indeed, this time the cut-off was favorable, but you should not, difficult to draw conclusions thereof or based thereon, because the cut-off effect may move in a different direction at the next cut-off. The fact is that the capital employed is meant to remain relatively low because of that business model of having the, I would say, the pipeline financed by others.
But so, Mark, in that case, if metal prices stay where they are today, how do we get further benefits on the working capital for the second half to have some progress on the free cash flow generation if there might have been a 60 million swing in Q2 just because of that cutoff date on recycling?
Yep. No, I don't think we meant further benefits from the working capital reduction. We meant further free cash flow generation based on the EBITDA performance that we expect. And if metal prices stay where they are, probably... and give or take the cut-off effect, stable working capital requirements. That's what was meant.
Okay, thank you.
Now, let me move to the your question regarding the mix in the catalysis. Clearly, we see a change in the mix. We saw a change in the mix in the first half of this year because the growth in relative terms was faster in the North American market than in other regions. And In Europe, also the diesel was somewhat more affected by the downturn than gasoline sales. So all in all, diesel was slightly down in terms of overall proportion of the global automotive market. And you also, as you pointed out, you also had a increased proportion of somewhat smaller engines. So the diesel-gasoline change in mix had an effect on the our overall margins, and that's what also that was also mentioned in the press release and in my earlier comments. As you know, the margins are higher in diesel applications, so that's an unfavorable mix effect. And we do not expect, we do not see today major reasons to believe that the mix would be fundamentally different in the second part of this year.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, please bear in mind that you can ask a question by pressing 01 or press 02 to withdraw your question. And we have a new question from Arnaud Goossens from Exane BNP Paribas. Please go ahead and ask your question.
Yes, good afternoon. Most of my questions have been answered, but I have one more question regarding energy materials. Because we see EBITDA margins still falling year on year, and I was wondering, when do you expect the ramp up in rechargeable battery materials, the ramp up in volume, to start to feed through to stronger margins? And so that's the only question remaining. Thanks.
Yeah. Well, actually, Arnaud, the that has started to happen in a way, but is masked. By other effects, the volume ramp up, the volume growth in rechargeable battery materials has started to percolate to the bottom line, despite the higher depreciation charge and despite the very high levels of development and qualification work. Of course, we're not yet at levels of return that are. We're not yet seeing the levels of return that. We want to achieve in that business, because there is still some further ramp up to be realized. But really what happened in the first half of the year is that the contribution from the other three business units was lower than a year ago, in cobalt and specialty materials, in electro-optic materials, and in thin film products. And that is especially for the smaller business units of electro-optics and thin film products. This is a direct effect of the downturn in the economy, and so the lower contribution from these three units is really explaining the decrease in margins overall for the business group, and is masking the improvement that we start seeing, the improved contribution that we start seeing from rechargeable battery materials.
Just a short follow-up. Do you see any pricing pressure in RBM?
Well, pressure always exists, of course. And as we, this being said, as was discussed earlier, based on an earlier question, premiums have stabilized, and the product mix is also somewhat better. And so it's. Not pressure that is translating into lower premiums for the time being.
Okay, thanks. That's it.
Thank you very much. And our next question is from Denise Lepadatu from Kempen & Co. Please go ahead and ask your question.
Good afternoon. I have two remaining questions connected to recycling. First of all, is the volume decline in H1 only related to the longer than usual maintenance period? And also, do you expect another shutdown to be required for preparing for the bottlenecking activities? And secondly, in terms of electronic scrap, can you explain how is independent is the refining charge from the value of the material recovered?
So the lower volumes in the first half are indeed due to the shutdown of the smelter. And will we need other shutdowns? Well, we shut down regularly because the smelter needs maintenance, needs relining, etc.
Yeah, but I meant in terms of a longer shutdown period, as we saw in Q1.
It could well be over the next 2 or 3 years a number of investments will need to be realized in order to prepare the facility for debottlenecking. So that might be necessary. So, and let's face it, the impact on results, if you look at the overall profitability of the business, is not too much of an issue. What was your next question?
The second question was related to electronic scrap.
Yeah.
And I was wondering how independent is the refining charge from the value of the material recovered?
Yeah, actually, the refining charge depends on the complexity of the material and the kind of processing steps that are required in order to recover the metal. So it is somewhat independent from the value of the materials to be recovered. And in electronic scrap, it is one of the reasons it is somewhat independent from the value of the materials to be recovered is because the recycling of the scrap is mandated,
mm-hmm.
And especially in Europe, by European directives. So that's what is driving, to a large extent, the refining charges.
Okay. Thank you for your answers.
Thank you very much. And we have a question from Adam Collins from Liberum. Please go ahead and ask your question.
Yeah, hi. Good afternoon, everybody. I had a couple of questions. Firstly, we haven't talked about the impact of currencies on the first half, where there's been quite a sort of considerable move down in euro-dollar. I wondered if you just could quantify the impact there on sales and EBIT, and maybe just remind us what the rule of thumb sensitivities are for that. And then just to follow on the subject of the electro-optics businesses, in the notes, you talk about the fact that the average premium has decreased with the shift in product mix. I just wanted to clarify that. Do you mean that with the fall in space solar cells, you're seeing a deteriorating mix because they are high-value activities relative to concentrated solar? And then following on from that, you've doubled your capacity in Oklahoma in the last year or two with a view to exploiting the longer-term opportunities in concentrated solar. But I don't really have a feel for where we're at right now in terms of plant utilization there. So I wondered if you could give us a sense of whether that plant has decent utilization rates now and how you see that developing as concentrated solar develops.
Okay, so let me start with the currency effects. I mean, we're exposed to the U.S. dollar-euro exchange rate. We're also exposed to a number of other exchange rates, South African rand, Korean won, the Japanese yen, the Brazilian real. So if you isolate the U.S. dollar-euro exchange rate, this was indeed positive with the strengthening of the U.S. dollar against the euro. However, let's bear in mind that most of the metals are being traded in U.S. dollars as well. So if you take the metal price impact overall, this was, I would say, more than offsetting the positive effect of the U.S. dollar. Looking to the second question about electro-optic materials, I'm not going to comment on the capacity utilization of the given plant, but clearly if you look at the configuration of this unit, today with the lower demand from the space, satellites, low frequency TV, etc., it is in capacity is not utilized, it is underutilized today, and indeed mix is not so favorable with the substrates going into satellite and LED actually that was given in space application. And CPV today is not brilliant. It has increased some course of last year, then stagnate, and you know that being, or you will understand that for the time being, all technologies that are competing mainstream panels are not doing so well. That's for the time being.
Thank you.
Okay, so
there are no more questions in queue.
Okay, so if there are no more questions, then I would like to close the conference call here, and thank you for attending the call. And as usual, if you have follow-on questions, please feel free to get in touch with our investor relations team. They, Geoff and Evelyn will be more than happy to field your questions and to, if necessary, to direct them to those who are best positioned to address your questions. So thank you again, and I look forward to seeing you soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you, gentlemen. Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes our conference call. Thank you all for attending, and have a very nice day.